Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started. Wages and declining revenues are hitting firms, according to the report. Some 34% say they only have 1 month or less of cash reserves on hand.
That's rough. That's definitely not a good statistic. Small businesses and medium-sized businesses are hugely important to the flow to larger businesses because they purchase from larger businesses on a large scale.
Yeah.
So they're a huge part of the economy as a whole.
What's going on, guys? Welcome into another episode of Money Moves. As always, your host, Matty A, co-host, Mr. Ryan Breedwell.
Hola.
We cover all things stocks, real estate investing, politics, a little bit of personal finance to help you on your wealth building journey. Welcome back from Mexico.
Thank you. I had a great time.
I missed you.
It was a much needed, literally letting my hair down moment. I was like,
your long hair?
Oh, I was ready to bang. It was blown in the southern breeze.
We've got some great stuff to dig in on today. I think the biggest topic of discussion, of course, is FOMC meeting this week. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
We've got more earnings reports coming out, more data and economic reports coming out. We've got, I don't know if you saw the Google making history.
Oh.
We'll talk about that and what that was.
Maybe I know, maybe I don't.
Some interesting news around Bitcoin that you shared with me this week that could have a major impact on it long term.
It already did.
It already had it in the short term.
Yeah.
We've got more data coming out on single family office. So we are going to dig in and waste no more time. Before we do dig in, did you see that the Department of Transportation has issued a new rule requiring airlines to give you an automatic refund if your flight is canceled or delayed, or if they lose your bags?
I did not hear about the last part about the lost bags, but you know what? That's like a long time coming. Airlines have been like able to be like, oh, we lost your bag.
Too bad.
It'll be at your house in 12 to 24 hours. We'll overnight it. Bro, I don't have any clothes.
Yeah.
Or like in my case, I don't have my contacts, or I don't have my toothbrush, or, you know, something like that.
Every time I've traveled, honestly, what feels like over the last year and a half, almost every flight is delayed. I've had multiple flights actually get canceled. I've been so frustrated flying with airlines.
What airline do you fly?
My favorite is Delta or United.
I never get on
Delta. And American Airlines has by far been the worst. That's the one that I've probably had the most trouble with. But I just love seeing that. I think that's a win for travelers as a whole.
Damn, I've been delayed 2 times and it's awful. Especially when you're going home.
Usually, I time my stuff strategically. I don't want to fly in a day early just in case something happens because I got kids at home. I got my wife. I want to make sure that I'm making as most efficient and effective trip as I possibly can. And so sometimes you try and thread the needle and obviously that's
been, damn, that sucks.
Yeah, bites you in the butt every once in a while.
Did you see the El Salvador president?
I saw him today? Calling everybody. I did watch that.
So if you guys haven't seen this, it's worth
pretty epic
seeing and listening to from the perspective of, I think many people would agree that whether it's US, whether it's Russia, whether it's El Salvador, whether it's just big government in general, there's a lot of bribery. There's a lot of corruption. There is a lot of
cronyism.
Yeah. And so the president of El Salvador essentially called in the executives from every major branch of government, got them all in a room with his entire cabinet, and basically said that he is going to allow the AG, Attorney General, to investigate every single one of them.
Because it's the highest power independent body that's not a part of them.
Yes.
So that's what he was like. It was epic.
It was so good. If you haven't watched it, and essentially, right, I think depending on how that goes, I would love to see more governments do this. I'm also curious to see how it plays out. And he talked about like his speech and how he did it. It was like poetic. It was like, it felt like a movie scene. And he was essentially just saying how your legacy is about doing the right things and making the right decisions and being a person of integrity and ethics. And he was talking about how his presidency is not going to be about how much money he makes or, you know, does this or that. It's going to be around creating an honest and fair democracy for the people that he was elected to serve. I was like, homie is killing it. I wish we had more politicians like that. But you also look at what's going on with, you know, Javier Milei in Argentina. And obviously they've had some major transitions and transformations since him coming into office. And the number one thing that was plaguing that country was inflation.
Correct.
Bad inflation.
Extreme inflation.
We're talking like 200%+ inflation.
It might even be 2000.
Was it?
Yeah, it's some nuts stuff. Like it's like some Zimbabwe levels.
It was crazy. High. But that being said, Milei announced Argentina's first budget surplus in 16 years. Their monthly inflation in Argentina could fall below 10% in April, which is a sign that the policies that he's been doing, which ultimately has been downsizing big government, is actually working. And who would have thought? You get the government out of the way, and shit starts to work.
Yeah, reduces fixed spending. And there are arguments, and I get them, that it forces a lot of stuff to be privatized.
Sure.
And there's also I don't know if you saw the new show on Amazon Prime called Fallout.
No.
It's like after the video game Fallout.
Okay.
But it is about how the whole world becomes privatized because the government can't afford to support itself anymore because it keeps getting itself in wars. And then the companies decide that end of the world is a good product. So they drop nukes on themselves. So it was it's great, crazy, good show. Would recommend you watching it. But the point being, too much of either is a bad thing.
Yeah.
You want to balance, and really capitalism is the balance. It's enough government oversight so there's regulation, there's a fair and open market. I would say that's what the goal is. And it's not done perfectly. I'm not saying that. But it's also enough privatization where it creates competition so that companies are fighting for business from consumers with either product innovation, product price, or both. So that is, in my opinion, why I think capitalism ultimately will be around in all successful nations. And we can see that. Developing nations that are doing well embrace capitalism and some form of democracy. And our country is the financial powerhouse of the world because we are a capitalistic economy.
Yep.
So I think hope good stuff for Argentina. I think he's just super cool. I love seeing when he goes on the planes.
Oh yeah, he's a man of the people.
Him meeting
trenches.
Trump was so funny. He was like,
they were like homies.
I know. His hair cracks me up. He reminds me of Boris Johnson, but a better version.
He reminds me of a real life Austin Powers.
Oh baby,
the way he looks and carries himself. He's so charismatic. He is definitely not a
gold member or the spy who shagged me.
The spy who shagged me. Yeah. Speaking of competition, we've got billionaires racing to buy TikTok after Chinese owners are ordered to sell the app. Many of the parent company founding committee members are saying that they essentially don't want to sell it all, would rather shut it down, or are considering selling it without the algorithm.
Yeah, I think the thing that makes it hard is they can't, I think in the selling of it, they have to sell some of their algorithm for it. And from what I understand, I don't think they're a profitable company. So that, I think they will shut it down before they would sell
it. I mean, this has years of runway in fighting in court, by the way. Like, there's no way this is happening anytime soon.
No, this would be a different administration.
So I know the people that are, you know, freaking out about it, this could take years upon years to work its way through the court system and actually see a final ruling on this.
I agree. And because there'll be multiple courts, they will refile multiple different ways.
It'll make its way all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Probably.
Just for the fact that it is, I think, argued that about it's tied the case. To the yeah. First Amendment.
Yeah, something about the case. They won't say, this is because it's TikTok. It'll be like, it's boiled down to
attack on free speech or free expression, right?
Yeah.
Small businesses are showing some signs of slowing and struggles. As of this month, 43% of small businesses were unable to pay their rent in full in April due to economic headwinds. That's the highest rent delinquency rate since March of 2021. This is an updated report that just came out from Bloomberg. They noted that increasing costs, wages, and declining revenues are hitting firms. According to the report, some 34% say they only have 1 month or less of cash reserves on hand.
That's rough. That's definitely not a good statistic. Small businesses and medium-sized businesses are hugely important to the flow to larger businesses because they purchase from larger businesses on a large scale.
Yeah.
So they're a huge part of the economy as a whole. I wonder what sector their money.
Yeah, I mean, you always have to take these reports with a grain of salt, right?
And a lot of those are restaurants.
Data set is, I don't know. I didn't dig in specifically on this data set and what types of small businesses or how many different sectors or industries are covered in it. But that being said, like you said, and we'll talk a little bit about earnings, you see some of these massive monopolies and conglomerates that are seeing quarter over quarter growth and they're killing it. But then you hear reports like this where Main Street, the small businesses, the medium-sized businesses are really struggling. And it really ties into the narrative that the middle class is shrinking and going away and struggling in a very big way while the top, you know, consolidates and gets a little bit bigger and obviously poor getting poorer.
I saw some interesting data though that would conflict with that, saying like last week when Visa reported, they reported I believe 4% year-over-year growth on credit card usage. And Visa is not a American Express. Typically, what's reported is when American Express reports their credit card usage, it's an indication of higher net worth earners because that's the people they service and small business owners. Visa is a more broad. And so their spending was up 4% year-over-year, which translated into a positive revenue report for them. But one of the things that I took away and a lot of other analysts took away from that was that the consumer as a whole, because that would cover everybody, is still somewhat resilient and I think even more resilient than the data might be lending to. And so that's why I think there's a lot of people like Thomas Lee, for example, from like Fundstrat, who's been like spot on this year and last year as a bull. So somebody that I like to follow, he's a Bitcoin lover too. I'm not a hater.
What's his name again? Thomas Lee.
Yep. He's from Fundstrat. And he's got the same consensus that I do that as long as we continue to get inflation reports that even on CPI and PPI, those can go up. But as long as they don't spike out of control, yields don't go to an area they haven't necessarily been or too much higher, which is where we're at now. And earnings continue to be good and a beat, which they're much higher than people are expecting and much more of a beat than people are expecting. There's a pretty good case that the economy can continue to move forward and drive positive earnings into the stock market. I still am of the opinion that if there was some sort of easing in the monetary supply rate cuts, that would be a positive. But I also understand that if the data, we've followed data this whole time and they've said, so making data-driven decisions sometimes can work for you and work against you. And right now it's a little bit of both. There's conflicting data on both sides. So I'm hoping that when we get rate decision tomorrow, nobody I don't think is guessing that it's going to be a pause. But what people are really looking for is the Fed speak after and what Chairman Powell says and leads to, because those words are indicative of what they're seeing behind closed doors. And if we even get a hint of dovishness, because it's been very hawkish the past few meetings, the tone, I think that'll ease concerns in the market and start us off on the back of earnings as a catalyst for a good May, because April is a rough investing month. One of the worst months, I think, on record since 21. I don't think we've seen a month that bad since 2021. So a lot in the air. I think tomorrow's a big day. And then if we get a good report, a pause, good Fed speak, we have to carry that through on Friday, and the non-farm private payrolls have to be
payroll, unemployment coming out later this week.
If unemployment can go up and payrolls can be cool, that would be huge easing for the market. Because right now, I think bulls are still in control, but there's still a lot of bearish sentiment moving around in the market in certain areas. I think the thing that right now is sticking its nose out the most is yields are back up to where they were in fall of last year. And I just think that the bond market's trying to find a pain point right now, and it hasn't found it, and it's not being challenged. We had a record issuance of bonds last week. I think it was $90 billion were issued. So I think that was a record issuance. So the debt market is sending mixed signals. Stock market is forward looking, so it keeps getting mixed news. It's an interesting time to be an investor, but there's tons of opportunity in times like this because people don't know what to do. So smart long-term investors, that's why we always try to buy quality. If they keep purchasing quality items that are on discount like you would in real estate,
yep,
long-term, that's going to pay off for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same sentiment that I have, in theory, I have around my investing on my commercial stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, you and I were just talking about what I'm getting, you know, on this 70,000 square foot retail center that I'm buying. It makes my butt pucker seeing that yield and that interest rate come across the term sheet.
Dude, the hurdle is, if you feel like you're, what are those people, you feel like a pool vaulter instead of a hurdle jumper, you have to hit that huge debt servicing rate, which just annihilates your cash flow, but in your NOI. But
in the long term,
exactly.
But it's the plan, right? Trusting in what the overall plan is, mitigating your risk as much as you can along the way, still buying, right? Just like
have to.
Just like on your side of the street,
you have
it's
to.
The same on my side of the street, even at an interest rate that high,
especially
that is
now.
So uncommon from what we've been used to psychologically over the last few years. As long as I still buy right, even with that interest rate as high as it's going to be, and executing on the plan and mitigating as much risk along the way, I'm still trusting in the process and the long-term commitment to that investment I am making, or else I wouldn't make it.
Yep.
So it's the same thing with whatever it is that you're doing. In times like right now, especially times like right now, it really does require a contrarian mindset and a long-term vision and a long-term commitment with short-term execution. And it just requires a little bit more finesse as you are driving the metaphorical car of your investment vehicle, to just making sure that you got your head on a swivel at all times, knowing that you don't have as much room for error in a lot of areas, but at the same time, you have to stay committed to your plans and be in the game if you want to win long term.
I don't know why people, again, treat their investments sometimes like a casino. But people do on both sides of the street. People get impatient with their real estate. Sometimes they get impatient with their investments. And you and I both have the, I don't want to sound like purview or view to understand that we've both been patient. We've both been through volatile times in both of our industries.
Yep.
Both figured it out. Both wouldn't put ourselves there again, but have gone through it. And we'll go through it again. We both know that. But we're better for it. We're wealthier for it, and we've learned a lot along the way. So it does, I don't want to say it cracks me up, but sometimes I'm just like, man, it's really, the formula to building wealth is not as complicated as people make it. They just overthink it, overcomplicate it, and then fail to execute in the short term on their long-term goals because they get too caught up in the short term and not focused on their long-term goals.
It's so crazy how susceptible we as humans are to allowing our emotions to overtake the logic.
Emotional decisions.
In scenario, in really all facets of life, right?
Yep.
The Fed might have to self-induce a recession if it wants to reach its target inflation rate, says Ian Lingen, a BMO strategist. Yellen said today she's concerned about where we're going with U.S. the U.S. deficit. Citigroup CEO Jane Fraser said U.S. consumers are becoming more cautious with their spending, making smaller purchases, per Reuters. Is this in alignment with what you're seeing out there and the sentiment that people are feeling, or is this another example of...
I think I would trust Visa over Reuters.
Yeah,
I would trust the payment processor. PayPal just reported today too, and Venmo transactions, they killed it. Their payment transactions are up. PayPal owns Venmo, if you didn't know. Sorry if that makes anybody sad. On both sides, on brand name transactions, I think they're up 7%, and that's using PayPal as the processor. It's up like 7% year over year. So I get that can be the sentiment of some people, but you have to be careful on who you ask and where you ask and why, because there's a lot of segments. Like in our state, for example, especially in our area, I see zero slowing down on spending whatsoever.
Yeah,
restaurants are full. Mall is full. And we know we live in a middle to upper income, wealthy plus. Everybody from middle income up we have around here. I don't think we have any big pockets of lower income, but we definitely have a good representation of the middle class and up, I would say. There's no slowing on spending really anywhere. Bars are full. Recreation is full. I mean, you saw Quarry Park has been full. Every night they have concerts.
So we're also in a more privileged area of the state too.
Well,
that's going to Oak Park. You think you're going to see the same thing?
I do. I think the breweries are going to be full.
Breweries. That's not going to be a representation of the average American.
That's what people go down to. The breweries will be full. I think the restaurants will be full.
Drinking their lives away.
There's not a ton to do over in Oak Park, if I'm being honest. But I do. Here's what I will say. I went to a basketball game. I think everybody goes to basketball games, especially in our area. It's in downtown Sac. Tickets are not Benji over expensive. When we went that night, or you couldn't go that night. When I went the night, dude. Packed, absolutely packed for a Suns game. Yeah. Nothing crazy. Every restaurant was packed. Everybody was out at the bars. The Dirty Dogs were ripping before and after the game. That's normally my sign. If we only get glizzies after the game, that's a recession indicator. But bottom line, I think that people are spending more than some outlets or are better off than some outlets are leading on. And that's translating through into maybe not what they say. I can't control what people say, but what they do. Mm. And if people are spending, whether they want to or not, if they spend at the end of the day, that's going to translate through into the economy as a positive.
I think this kind of ties into it. For the first time in U.S. history, young people are no longer better off economically than their parents were at the same age. An American born in 1940 had a 92% chance of doing better than their parents. Someone born in 1970 had a 61% chance, and a millennial born in 1984 or after, who would be 40 today, only has a 50% chance of being better off than their parents. I'm curious of whether or not that's just based on the current times that we find ourselves in, if there's more of a macro picture or assumption tied to those statements.
There's definitely a higher population, so there's a larger subset that they'd be taking from more and more into the future, especially the 50s to the 70s. We had a lot of war babies, right?
Yeah.
I also think that maybe that data is getting skewed a little bit because you have a lot of people, I would say a lot more people worked W-2 corporate America jobs up through the 90s into the early 2000s versus today. I think you have a lot more 1099 or pass-through income people, more real estate investors than there were 15 years ago. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, I think that argument can be made.
So I don't know if that's skewed by that.
I think, honestly, it might be just a sign of the times right now. Affordability isn't at an all-time low. If earning power and wage growth are where they have been at for the last few years, based on the challenge that has become very front and center with affordability, the median priced home in the U.S. now costs $332,000, meaning that prospective buyers need an annual income of at least $120,000 to afford it with a 10% down payment.
I think that's reasonable, though, considering like back in the 70s and 80s, people were living on $20,000 a year annual incomes because in California, for example,
let's say is that average annual income right now?
It depends. In our states,
we'll just say in the U.S., because this is a median probably average
around
the U.S.
Probably around
2023 was $59,000.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
probably. So that's most people need to make double that to afford a house now. Well, so yeah. that is actually in line with statement.
But if you look up the average income in California, it's going to be six figures. It'll be in line with that higher. Because in the areas where people make 60 grand, like in Indiana or in Kentucky, you can make that and have a great house.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or you can get a really great house to rent and be a lifetime renter, which a lot of people are out there. So there's opportunity for people that make that amount of money, just maybe not in our state. But I think that people like get caught up in the fact that it's expensive in some
California's
areas.
Average annual salary as of 2024 is $73,220.
Okay, so
the highest in the country is Massachusetts at $76,000. So there's not one state.
No, but that's almost 20% higher than the federal average, excuse me.
Yep.
So that's significant. That's significant. So if I could say that a person in California at a same job makes an average of 20% more. That's just look at our freaking fast food. You can work at a fast food job and actually make a decent living now, which is wild to say.
Yeah.
Most people that we know, even if they're not working insanely high paying jobs, if it's dual income and they're career driven jobs with benefits, so we'll say maybe a state job. I think if you had two state workers, which is common in our area, and they've worked at the state for a while, mid-level, not entry-level, they're making $170,000 to $210,000 a year combined with full benefits, and that's gross before taxes. We're not talking net. I think that's more representative of what we see in this area, but we have a lot of state workers in this area.
Yeah, so, Sacramento is.
Yeah, Sacramento is primarily that. So regardless, I think my opinion is until I see slowdown, even in our areas, because it'll eventually hit our area at some point, if it's going to hit at all, that I'm not so sure that consumers are spending less. They may be spending less in some areas, but the grocery stores are still reporting good earnings. There's lots of sales online, as we heard. There's lots of transactions going through. That stuff has to slow as well. So if that was slowing and we were getting these reports, I would be like, okay, yeah, that lines up now. But how are transactions up and spending is down?
Yeah,
that doesn't make much sense.
That's where there's a lot of head-scratching data.
That's why I trust Visa over Reuters. Just saying.
Yeah, I agree with that. Google making history. They have announced a dividend of 20 cents a quarter for each share held of the stock. This is the first time in the history of Google that they have ever offered a dividend.
80 whole cents a year.
Valley.
Per share, yeah.
So if you're holding a nice little bag of Google, I think, is that something to get excited over? And what does that say about the company?
It probably means that their growth is slowing because they're willing to pass through, even though it's not like a lot, that'll be billions of dollars a year that they have to pay out. Dividend.
And is that just because they want to prevent sell-off and they want to create stickiness through that yield?
I think people have had a long enough time to watch Apple. And Apple's been paying a dividend for quite a bit. And it did not affect their growth in a negative way like people thought it would. It also wasn't necessarily indicative that they were slowing necessarily because they've released other products that have fueled growth since they started paying their dividend. But what I do think it is it's a sign of the times because a lot more people are focused now on getting some sort of yield dividend investing.
Facebook just did it for the first time in their company history, right?
I would argue that
2 months later does it.
I would also argue that you would be surprised that these companies that decide that, even Nvidia, one of their main shareholders is the founders. So that also is a great and easy way to get a massive pay raise without asking for a pay raise. Hmm. So I'll also keep that in mind. I think Zuckerberg will make somewhere around $700 million this year, more off of his dividends alone.
Crazy.
Keep in mind, that's also something that it sounds a lot better than it may be for me and you that hold 70, 80 shares of Google versus the founders who have millions and millions of shares that get millions and millions of dollars paid to them for being an investor.
So optics wise, it's great for the shareholder,
it
but
sends
really
the stock price up quite a bit.
It's really very good for.
It's good for people that hold a lot of shares of the stock. And I will say Nvidia is the same case. Apple's the same case. Google is the same case. Meta is the same case. Go look at some of their primary shareholders and they're the original founders.
Yeah.
Tim Cook holds a lot of Apple stock. So does Warren Buffett. And that also goes to show you that people like Warren Buffett would probably never have bought Apple if it didn't pay a dividend.
Yeah.
So I think, again, if you go on like finance, FinTwit, that's what I like to call it, financial Twitter, a lot of people are focused on yield. That's why you have the advent of these new 13, 14, 15% call right option ETFs that people are getting in that pay monthly, which are like crazy risky, but they like the yield being paid to them every month. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think it is. It's good news, I think, for investors overall.
Well, good news for Tesla after getting beat up the last few weeks. Tesla's up 35% in 5 days post earnings, even though it sounds like they came a little short on earnings.
They did. I was not expecting that movement, but what have I said before? You doubt right when people start being consensus doubting Tesla, they blast off
35%.
Like a short squeeze, a little bit.
It says Tesla short sellers have lost nearly $5.5 billion over 4 days.
So I think it. What is a short squeeze?
Yes, please,
short squeeze.
Us.
People short the. They buy put. They buy short. They go short on a stock. When that stock price rises, and they become out of the money. OTM, they have a couple options. They can give margin, so loan money to the institution holding their stock and hope the price goes back down. They can close their position out at a loss because they expected the stock price to go down and it went up, or they can short it even more. And what do they have to do when they do that? They have to buy more stock. So they're going to go double down. And when they double down, it sends the stock price going up because in order to short stock, you have to borrow it or own it. And it transacts as a purchase. It looks like a purchase.
So it looks like somebody's buying more shares of the company.
And really, it's just somebody borrowing somebody else's shares that are already out in the open market. So it makes the stock price go up. We saw it with GME. We saw it with AMC. It's called a short squeeze. The shorts are getting squeezed and they believe in their position so much, they're essentially doubling down on their bet. You can think of it as when you're on the blackjack table and you're running and chasing your losses. This is the shorts chasing their losses, thinking and hoping that they have enough data and enough money to make it all back. We saw a lot of hedge funds close when they did this to GME because if it gets, if there's enough consumer money behind it and retail investors don't sell and continue to lock their shares up, and a lot of people put what are called call options on them to lock them so they can't be shorted, that squeezes the price higher and forces the short sellers to continue to double down on a loss and continue to double down and exacerbate their losses in order to be in the money at some point. So that is what I think is going on to a small degree. We're not talking about the GME or the AMCs, but 35% in 5 days on a stock with a market cap the size of Tesla.
That's big.
That's hundreds of billions of dollars. So retail investors don't have that kind of money, just so you guys know.
Some big institutional players moving some needles behind the curtain.
Correct. And it's behind the curtain. I wish I knew, but we will know soon because 13Ks will be filed.
Talking on the line of the powers that be, the DTC, the lending arm for securities and clearinghouse, just made a pretty significant move over the weekend on Bitcoin. What is that? What should we know about it? And why is it important to crypto investors?
They said for like the ETF and mutual funds that hold crypto, specifically Bitcoin. They said the word Bitcoin.
So what about like Blackstone?
Or the Ethereum. I don't think that they care about Ethereum. It's specifically Bitcoin is what they said. That they're doing a haircut up to 100% on lending and clearing of those funds, to clear those funds. Meaning the cost to support those types of funds will skyrocket because they'll have to be fully settled every day, which is more expensive than them being able to get loans or short-term loans from these clearinghouses like DTCC. Not good. Very bad for Bitcoin ETFs. The price is down 6% on the news. And I don't know why they said they didn't really explain. I sent you the little snippet. They just said they were going to do it. It's to 100% of products that are traded right now. So there, I think there's over 100 Bitcoin ETF products that are either filed for and some have been approved. Grayscale was the original, and we have other trusts and ETF products, but not good. And I said that they were going to regulate it eventually into like non-existence. They were just going to make some money along the way. Because the funniest thing is, it's like the institutions are holding custody of Bitcoin and then charging a fee for you to... It's, I don't want to talk bad about this because we do it, but it's the same as gold. The thing that we just don't tell people is like you own physical gold because you don't own physical gold. You own contracts that represent physical gold.
Right.
It's like buying gold through an ETF like we do and thinking you actually have physical gold like it's in your safe. You don't. It's in the safe somewhere else being held on your behalf, and that's where there's a fee charged to you.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
So, very interesting. I wonder how much it pushed Bitcoin below that 60,000 support, which is a huge support level for Bitcoin. So I wonder if it'll continue to go. If we get any hawkish tones in the market from FOMC tomorrow, that'll push the price even lower. It's been really clear that anytime we had any inflationary pressures this year, Bitcoin has acted as a risk asset. It hasn't acted as a hedge.
Which is interesting because it's complete opposite of what many Bitcoiners and the crypto heads say it should be doing.
Well, just go look at charts. Anytime the war, let's go look at what happened to Bitcoin when there was the geopolitical risk in Israel and Iran that's already passed. It tanked with the stock market. And the second the stock market's up, it's up. It rarely has days where it's inversely correlated to risk assets, which risk assets are equities. So it's slowly but surely doing exactly what I knew it would do. And it's just becoming a place. It's almost, it's, you can get better upside than maybe a stock, but you don't have to be as sophisticated to write an option or write a call or anything like that. You can just go buy a crypto and make 100% in a year or something like that, or lose 100% in a year, whatever you want. So it's becoming a place for people to speculate.
I saw news today that Binance's previous CEO, CZ, sentenced to 4 months in prison.
Really?
That broke a couple hours ago. He was in court over the last few days getting his sentencing. And as of today, 4 months in prison.
Yep. He admitted to like massive money laundering. So again, also though, good example, massive amount of money laundering, 4 months in prison, billions and billions of dollars of money laundering, may I add. Crazy illegal. Could have supported terrorism at some level. We wouldn't know. And gets 4 months in prison. White collar crime needs to be prosecuted more so that we don't get the Sam Bankman-Frieds. Although Sam Bankman-Fried got an appropriate sentence.
Yeah.
And he should not be eligible for parole. He should have to stay and serve that, because that level of fraud needs to be treated, that like the Bernie Madoffs and him, they need to spend a long time in prison as an example and to discourage people from doing that kind of stuff. Because if you do that with like what Bernie Madoff did, I mean, it's affected people for generations because of how much money they lost. So that should not be something that's taken lightly. So I'm glad that he got in prison. I think that's probably a little bit light of a sentence for laundering billions of dollars.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Maybe he donated to political parties.
Most likely he did.
I won't say which one because I don't know if he did or didn't, but that would be interesting.
Office product in the commercial real estate segment continues to face some pretty heavy headwinds. Delinquencies kept rising in the first quarter with rates unchanged for all other sectors. 6.8% of office loan balances were 30 or more days late, which was an increase from last quarter, 6.5%. That's per the Mortgage Bankers Association. And another big building, trophy building, falls at a very significant steep discount from none other than Blackstone. Good guess. Blackstone has sold property on Broadway in New York City for $185 million. They bought it in 2014 for $605 million. It was a $420 million loss, but a Blackstone rep had said, "We wrote this property off nearly 3 years ago and exited from this investment. It's a rare instance in our nearly $600 billion portfolio comprising more than 12,000 assets."
Yeah.
Okay. They can afford to take a $420 million.
We didn't feel that at all.
Yep. So pretty wild. So in closing, I'd love to throw this at you. I saw this on Twitter. What did you call it? FinTwit?
I said FinTwit.
FinTwit.
Financial Twitter.
I like it. I saw this kind of floating around. Which two would you choose? There's four options. You can pick two. Which two would you choose and why? Retire at 45, no mortgage, 800 credit score, $10,000 a month forever.
$10,000 a month forever.
And you get one more.
Oh, I get one more?
Yeah, you get two.
What was the other three?
Retire at 45, no mortgage, 800 credit score, 10,000 a month forever.
Retire at 45, 10,000.
Those were my two. I was like, retire at 45, 10,000 a month forever. I don't need good credit because I'm a creative real estate investor.
I would just invest it all until I was 45 and then retire even harder.
There you go. And obviously, if you strategically invest that 10,000 a month, you have the ability to probably increase your credit score and work your way towards no mortgage.
I agree. So you can do all of those with retire at 45 and 10,000 a month. If you can't pay off a mortgage with 10,000 a month, you got a problem.
You're doing something wrong. Thank you guys for tuning in today. As always, wrapping up another episode of Money Moves. Don't forget to check out millionairemindcast.com if you want to connect with Ryan and his amazing team. Free financial portfolio review. They do a financial x-ray.
Come on over.
For free anytime for our Millionaire Mindcast listeners. Just text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. If you're an accredited investor, you want to look at my deals that I invest in. You want to know what those are and when those are available. You can get on that list for free by texting the word deals to 844-447-1555 as well. With that being said, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. We'll see you guys in next week's episode.
Cheers, y'all.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Money Moves. Be sure to tune in next week for more news and updates. And if you got some value from today's show, all we ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're going to get entered into win a $100 gift card. Also, don't forget to take advantage of Ryan's free financial x-ray on your investment portfolio. And to do so, all you have to do is text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. What we have found by offering this out is most people have no idea what they're being charged from a fee perspective, or really in most cases, overcharged and whether or not their current investment and financial plan is actually aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. And this is something that Ryan and his amazing team do for all of our listeners for free. So be sure to take them up on that. Again, that's X-Ray, one word, 844-447-1555. Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're not on my deals list, be sure to text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to be notified of the private investment offerings my team and I put out. And last, don't forget to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family at millionairemindcast.com. Whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, calculators, the Rich Life Planner for those looking to take their goal setting and productivity to the next level. We've got all kinds of great and valuable tools available at millionairemindcast.com. With that being said, that's all for this week. Until next week's episode, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.